Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. If you got your Bibles this morning, if you'll find Matthew 24, Matthew chapter 24. We are going to spend our time this morning in Matthew chapter 24. Now, no fear, there are 51 verses in Matthew 24. Well, we will not read all of those at the beginning, lest you fall asleep, right? But anyway, we will be highlighting some verses in Matthew 24 today because this is Jesus' words on the end. And it seemed appropriate to me that as we begin kind of looking at Revelation and as we kind of get into John's vision of what Jesus gives to him of for the churches, that it would be appropriate that we look at kind of what Jesus himself says about these things. And so you can also read that there's this kind of text is also in Mark chapter 13. I think I've got it on your outline. And then in Luke chapter 21. And so those all three kind of work together. And on Wednesday mornings, back several months ago, we went through this in more detail than we'll go through this morning. And I believe we were live streaming Wednesdays at that point. And so you might can go back, but you could go back through our Facebook page and scroll down far enough. And if you want to see a more detailed of this text, we took kind of chunks of it at a time. I would encourage you to go do that. Like I said, it'll be on our Facebook page. I believe it's on there. I believe we had been videoing at that point. So anyway, all right. But today we're going to kind of give a high level, quick view of Jesus's kind of words about the end. Then we'll kind of sum it up with why are we doing this at all today? That'll be kind of the question that'll lead us into our application. But before we begin, all right, we came up with a little math equation of A plus B plus C equals. Remember, the first A is author, and who did we say the author was of Revelation? John. Good job. Y'all are A-plus students so far. All right, and who did we say the audience was? Seven churches. Good. Y'all are 100% so far. And they were made up of real people with real problems. All right, and then we said the background, and it's three things now. And so it was the Roman Empire and imperial domination, or the imperial cult, a persecution, and then heresy among the churches. That was kind of the background. And then 2 weeks ago, the last time we were together, we talked about context. Specifically, we talked about context, and we spent our time talking about what's known as apocalyptic literature and how John styles the book of Revelation after or in that genre of literature, which is vastly different than anything you and I read today. It's just not a style that we read and that we write in today, and it has specific parameters around it that we need to know. And so we talked about how it uses metaphor and illustration and imagery heavily to convey a very simple point. And the very simple point, kind of, if you want to know what Revelation is in a nutshell, it is Jesus wins overall. Like that. That's kind of it. Right? That's kind of not done. Now, I would encourage you to come back. Don't sit there and say, oh, well, we've heard it all now. I just go home for the rest of, you know, the next year and a half or however long it's going to take us to get through this. No, come back because we'll see how John works that idea out. But today we're going to spend our time in Matthew 24 because Jesus has some very important words to say to us that we need to have at least in the back of our mind as we go into Revelation, okay? Now, because we're not talking about Revelation, although we set some of the context for that, we need to also, here's the word again, context. We need to set the setting or the context for Matthew 24, and I'm going to give it to you really quickly. Jesus has been this is during Holy Week, so this is like the last week that Jesus is alive before he's crucified. I always say that before, you know, the last week Jesus is alive, but he's still alive. Anyway, the last week before Jesus is crucified, that's the point, okay? This is during the week that leads up to Easter. and it's probably on Tuesday-ish, give or take, Tuesday, Wednesday, Jesus has been teaching in the temple, and he's about to leave the temple, okay? Now, we're going to read the first few verses because it will give us the immediate context of what's going on, and this is important, okay? Listen to me. You got to get these first few verses, okay? You with me? So listen intently. All right, here we go. Jesus left the temple and was going away. In other words, he's been teaching, he's leaving the temple. When his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. Now, I believe it's Luke gives us a little bit of more detail. Luke or Mark or Luke tell us that they actually say, look, Jesus, how beautiful the stones and how beautiful the temple is. Right? All right, so that's kind of what they say. Oh, look, there you go. Pastor Adam's got it for us. Way to go. This is Mark 13:1. So this is the same story at the beginning. Look, teacher, what wonderful stones and wonderful buildings. So as they're leaving the temple, the disciples are like, hey, Jesus, ain't this is the redneck version, wonderful. Look how good they did when they built this temple. All right, now back to Matthew 24:2. But he answered, so Jesus answered, you see all these, don't you? Well, of course, yeah, we see them. Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be torn down. In other words, you think all of these things are beautiful. One day it's all going to be gone. Now this would have been because you have to imagine, like, the size of the Temple Mount, so it's this big, it's like a couple of soccer fields, like 3 or 4 football fields, big, it's huge. That's like the flat surface on top, and then there's this, like, wall all the way around it, and the temple proper in the middle, and all of these other surrounding buildings. And Jesus says, you think this is amazing, there's going to be a day where none of this is going to be here anymore. All right, so let's go to verse 3. All right, here we go. As he said, all right, so here's kind of the deal. They're walking out of the temple. Jesus makes the statement. They're going down the valley, the Kidron Valley, and then as they cross up to go up the Mount of Olives, here's the next scene. So they've left the temple. Now you can imagine the disciples have clearly been wondering about what Jesus says, because here's what happens next. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately because they've been wondering, how in the world is this going to happen? Here's what they say. Tell us, now listen to what they ask. This is crucial. Tell us when these things will be. In other words, when will all of the stones be torn down? And here's question 2. What will be the sign of your coming? And question 3, and the end of the age. So in other words, here's the 3 questions they ask. When will these things take place? In other words, Jesus, when are the stones and all the buildings going to be torn down? Number 2, what will be the sign of your coming? And 3, what will be the sign of the end of the age? Now here's what you got to add. Here's what you got to understand. For the disciples, now notice, listen to me carefully. For the disciples, these 3 things are all one event. Because in their minds, they cannot comprehend a time when there will not be a temple that the world will continue. In other words, in their minds, if something happens to the temple, it must be the end of the world. Okay, you with me? So that's the questions they ask. How many questions? 3. What are they? When will the temple and all the stones be torn down? And then obviously, what will be the sign of your coming? And then clearly to them, what will be the sign of the end of the age? That's the 3 questions that they answer. Now, Jesus is going to answer each of those questions. But before he does that, look at what he says in verse 4. And Jesus answered them. So the first thing out of Jesus' mouth isn't, well, fellas, let me give them to you. 1, 2, 3. What does he say? See that no one leads you astray. But let me ask you a question. Think about it. Why would Jesus say this first? Why would he say it first? Why would he not just go into answer the three questions in order? He's going to do that, but why would he start by saying, see that no one leads you astray before he answers those questions? Well, I think it's easy. Because we're easily led astray. Like, for example, you don't have to tell kids, hey, don't go climb that tree if your kid has no propensity to climb trees. But if your kid acts like a monkey and loves to climb everything, then you have to clearly say, hey, don't climb that tree. Why? Because you know they're going to. That's why Jesus is doing this. He knows that the tenor of our hearts, the disciples, is who he's telling this to. They came to him privately and said, hey, you got to help us figure this thing out. And since then, we've been doing the same. Hey, Lord, you got to help us figure this thing out. And Jesus, what we miss is this first line that Jesus says, hey, see that no one leads you astray. And why does Jesus say that? Because their heart, just like your heart, just like my heart and my mind, is easily led astray. Now, Jesus gives six areas where you and I can easily be led astray. And I'm going to give them to you really quickly. Here we go. Number one, Jesus says in verse 5 and then in verse 11, that you and I can easily be led astray by false Christs and false prophets. Hey. We know this one clearly. You can just search on YouTube. And you can see a church that is quintuple the size of ours with some dude up there preaching some foolishness. Yeah, preach. Oh. Ain't said a word that's biblically accurate. Right? Come on. Trust me, they're on there. Right? We see that today. Why does that happen? Because we are easily led astray. Jesus tells us it's going to happen. Jesus says, hey, before I even answer your questions, there's going to be people who are false to me and false prophets, false truth tellers, and they're going, if you're not careful, they will lead you astray. Here's the second thing he says. Hearing of wars and rumors of wars. What does that tell us? We have a propensity to think that anytime, oh my gosh, what is going on right now? Come on, y'all know, you've watched the news. A war against Russia and Ukraine and heaven. Oh my, this is the end of the world, y'all. Hamas and Israel are at war. And what does Jesus say? If you and I aren't careful, every time there's a war or a rumor of war, what will we think? We will be led astray. So, what should that tell us about the war with Israel and Hamas? You can figure that one out, right? Here's the second thing he says. Natural disasters. Look, this is a funny one for my dad. We were fishing. I remember like it was yesterday. We were fishing down in Florida, and it was where that big tsunami came down in, earthquake tsunami, down in like Indonesia or something. And we're in Florida. I mean, it's like 6 o'clock in the morning. We're like wolfing down some breakfast to go out and fish for the day. And he says, hey, man, signs of the time. And I'm like, yeah, Pop, maybe. And he's like, what do you mean? And so I'm like, well, you know, there's the... You know. Anyway, we went fishing. He's like, okay. Anyway, but what does Jesus say? That lest you be led astray, because what happens when a big natural disaster happens, easily be led astray, right? Number four. Followers of Jesus will be delivered to tribulation. He says that you should not be led astray when even you or those you love are led into tribulation and suffering. He also says that many will fall away. And lastly, in verse 12, he says that the love of many will grow cold. And so you have this huge, this big, thick paragraph where Jesus says, if you and I aren't careful, careful, we will all be led astray by a variety of things. It may not be wars and rumors of wars for you, but it might be natural disasters, or it might be tribulation, or it might be a conflagration of all of these things. But Jesus says, be careful. And I want you to especially note a couple of verses in here. Verse number 6 is the first one. Verse number 6. Verse number 6, Jesus specifically says in this section on wars and rumors of wars, for this must take place. Read out what's the last 5 or 6 words after the comma. But this is, the end is not yet. Huh. That's fascinating. I guess that book that I bought during the Iraq invasion about that being, you know, the end of the world, I guess he was kind of wrong, wasn't he? Because we're still here. Jesus hasn't come back yet. Anyway. All right. Verse number eight. All of these are the what? Beginning of the birth pains. Now, ladies, you understand this, right? You have the beginning, and then you have the actual time where the baby's born, right? And the beginning can be, in some cases, days before the actual birth of the baby, right? You have those Braxton Hicks thing, isn't that right? Did I say that right? Those like contractions that aren't really contractions, but they make you—they're preparing your body for the actual birth of the baby. I'm way out of my field here on this one, but I do understand that it's the beginning doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that the baby's coming out, and that's the idea that Jesus is saying that all of these things are the beginning. Right? Now, verses 13 and 14. Catch this. Verses 13 and 14. But the one who endures... 14. And this gospel... What gospel? The gospel of Jesus Christ, of the kingdom, will be... Listen. Will be proclaimed throughout the whole world as a testimony to all the nations. And what's that for the comma? And then the end will come. So let me ask you a question. Think about it. Why hasn't Jesus come back yet? Like, why didn't he come back yesterday? Well, okay, so the easy answer is because it's not his time. Okay. But based off this verse, what should it tell us? Thank you, Ms. Riva. Thank you. There are people out there. It might be your neighbor. That's the point. We don't know who it is. But you could actually say and actually there are people out there who still need to hear the gospel of Jesus that haven't heard it yet. And when the last one, whoever that is, wherever that is, hears the gospel of Jesus and believes, at that moment, everything is set and in place. So what should that tell you and I? Hey, we need to be on our horse, so to speak. We need to be out there spreading the gospel of Jesus. We need to be encouraging Christians. Hey, look, in a very real sense, like that's one of the reasons we do what we do. Like next Sunday, you're going to have a little thing in your bulletin. Right, and we're going to start promoting Annie Armstrong, which is our Easter offering, which goes to North American missions. Because you want to know why? There are people who live in the United States who rarely, if ever, have heard the name of Jesus outside of using it in a profane way. And have no idea what Jesus has done. And that's why we give at Christmas to the Lottie Moon Christmas offering for international missions. Because there are people across the world who've never ever heard the name of Jesus. And some of those could clearly be in Jesus' mind when he speaks here. Right? So what does Jesus say first before he answers the three questions? Hey, watch out. Don't get hoodwinked. Pay attention. Because there's things out there that will cause you to get distracted from what you really need to be doing. And you say, well, what do I really need to be doing? Well, hold on. We're going to talk about that at the end. Right? Now the disciples are ready for Jesus to answer the three questions, and he does them in direct order. So the first question he answers starting in verse number 15. Now, I'm going to sum this up really quickly, okay? It's verses 15 through about verse 28. Jesus mentions this thing. It's on the screen. The abomination of desolation. Like, don't get... here we go. Here's what that means. Jesus is using an image that Daniel, the prophet Daniel, from the Old Testament, uses in Daniel 9, 24 through about verse 27. And Daniel, in this prophetic vision, in this apocalyptic vision in his time, says that, hey, this thing is going to happen. And when it happens, things are going to be bad for God's people, for Israel. And that came true. So Daniel prophesied about it. Let me do it this way for y'all. Daniel prophesied about it and said, hey, something's going to happen, and it's going to be this thing. He uses the language abomination of desolation and all of this. And then it comes true. And it comes true in around the 100s BC, in the 100s BC, when the Greek Syrians, called the Seleucids, were ruling over Israel. And basically the Greeks were forcing the Jews to be Greek. And the Jews were like, we're not having this. We don't want to do it. And so they resisted. And so they resisted until this one Greek-Syrian ruler came around. His name was Antiochus IV Epiphanes. Antiochus, he was the fourth Antiochus. And his title was Epiphanes, much like Epiphany. Like, hey, I'm God's person here. Right? So what do you think the Jews thought about that? Probably not, buddy. And so he was a tyrant. So he was like, no, y'all are going to be Greek Jewish people. I'm going to force you to it. And so he suspended worship in the temple, and the Jews revolt. He came down hard and oppressed, killed, persecuted. And eventually things were out of control. It was chaotic and all this, till he shut the temple down completely and went in there and put all of this Greek imagery on it, and then took a pig, which Jews don't eat, and sacrificed this pig on the altar, which the Jews at the time interpreted as what Daniel was prophesying about. Because if you go back and you read Daniel, and then you look at the events that happened, they line up perfectly. And so the disciples, you and I may not understand when Jesus says abomination of desolation, but immediately the disciples knew, oh, that time that they sacrificed the pig, which Daniel prophesied about. And so Jesus is saying, hey, Daniel prophesied about it, and it came true. And now Jesus is saying, hey, I'm telling you that this same thing is going to happen again in the future. So Daniel, Greek Syrians, Jesus uses the same image and said, hey, it's going to happen again. And he lists all this stuff that's going to happen. And guess what? It happened again. It happened in 70 AD when the Romans came in and totally sacked the city of Jerusalem and literally tore down every stone one from another. And to this day, the temple has never been rebuilt since 70 AD when Titus came in and literally leveled the entire city and literally tore down every stone. That's why today there's that Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. You know, where all the Jews go and they stick the little prayers in and they pray in front of the wall. That's the only remnant piece. And that is what that is. It's not actually a wall for the temple. It's a container wall for all the dirt that backfilled when they built the temple. And that's it. It's just that little stretch. That's it. So Jesus is using Daniel's image to say, hey, Daniel prophesied about it and it came true. And Jesus saying what Daniel prophesied that came true is going to come true again. And it came true again in 70 AD. And so Jesus saying, hey, that's going to happen. And it happened. Now for Jesus, he separates the first question from the last two. What was the first question? Well, he just answered that, which is, when are these stones going to be torn down? And that happened. Then Jesus says, after, that's the key word, after this, what will be the sign of my coming? Now, you and I, in our minds, when we hear what will be the sign of Jesus coming, we're thinking, all right, this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then Jesus is going to come back. But if you read Jesus' words here in Matthew and then in Mark and in Luke, it's very different. Because what Jesus says is going to happen is several things, but they are going to be in rapid succession, one right after the other. And it starts in verse 29. And he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then will appear, now listen to this, then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man. Oh, here it is. He's about to tell us, right? Then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will what? What's the next words? Verb. Will see the Son of Man coming on clouds of heaven with great power and glory. So, in other words, what is the sign that Jesus is coming? It's Him. It's Him. Now, yes, all of these three passages, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all say that there's natural phenomena that occur, and they even mention that a trumpet will be sounded. But it's not like all of this great buildup. The idea that Jesus portrays is, it's like the sun and moon and stars fall, boom, trumpet sounds, and boom, there He is. Right? That's why when Jesus answers the next question, which is when will the end of the age be, He says, hey, bud, I don't know the exact day nor the hour. And then He goes on to give these illustrations of what will be going on. And He says, basically, there's going to be two people in the field. And there's going to be two people doing this. And there's going to be two people doing that. In other words, you and I and the entire globe will be doing day-to-day stuff that you and I normally do from day to day. And then in an instant, visibly, for all to see, unequivocal. Nobody's going to wonder, was that it? It will be unequivocal that all of this stuff will happen in rapid succession, and the sign that Jesus is coming will be when He shows up. Now, all right, so three questions. Let's recap really quickly. Three questions. When will the stones of the temple be torn down? Well, Jesus said, hey, it's going to happen. Here's how it's going to happen, and it's already happened. You can go look at it. You can go to Jerusalem and see that what Jesus prophesied has come true, and it came true in 70 AD. Now the disciples ask, what's going to be the sign of your coming? And what does Jesus answer? When you see me coming, yay, right? Well, our minds more than that, right? Come on, let's be real. You want like the 10 steps to know that Jesus is coming. Come on, you do. But what does Jesus say? You're going to be baking bread. Guys, you're going to be, Mr. Ron's going to be painting a house. Right? You're going to be at work. My wife's going to be teaching pre-Kers. You retired folks going to be doing what all y'all retired folks do. Right? You're going to be poking cows or riding an excavator or doing whatever. Or you're going to be arguing with each other. And then all of a sudden, bam, in an instant, for all to see, visible for the world, Christ will return. And then Jesus says, hey, I don't know when the day nor the hour of all this is going to happen, but it's going to be happening when you're going about life and when you're doing your daily stuff and when and it's going to be so everybody can see. So the question comes, and I know this is, the question comes, why are we talking about this today versus Revelation? And I got a couple reasons, okay? Here's reason number one. And this one's important. The same Jesus who tells all of these things to the disciples is the same Jesus who's going to give the visions to John. Right? Here's what I mean. The Jesus in Revelation is the same Jesus in this passage today. It's not Jesus 2.0. Right? So in some sense, whatever Jesus says here is going to correlate with whatever we're going to see in Revelation. It's not going to be two contrary ideas. Right? Because if we're not careful, we'll see loving Jesus of the Gospels and Jesus the rider with the sword coming to crush everyone in Revelation. Now, can we learn some new aspects of Jesus' character? Yes. But the same Jesus who died on the cross, the same Jesus who did this, is the same Jesus who gives the visions in Revelation as well. And so you can't divide this out and say, oh, well, that's the Jesus of the Gospels, and then Jesus in Revelation is a completely different person. You can't do that. But here's another reason. So one reason is for us to keep in mind of that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? Even to today. And He will be the same in heaven when we're there one day. But here's the other thing, because we're not there yet, right? But the kicker is we don't know when that will happen, because Jesus tells us two will be in the field. Two will be grinding, doing whatever. And you and I will be doing whatever we do. And so Jesus gives several keys in these last few verses of chapter 24. And He gives us four ideas of what we need to be doing in the interim time. All right. And here's what He says. I've got them on your outline for you. Here's what He says. He says we must be on guard. We must stay awake. We must watch and be ready. Now, here's what I've got, the definitions for those words. Let's read them together. Be on guard. To see to it that something happens. In other words, you want to see your guard. You are watching to see if something is going to happen so that you can know when it happens. Right? Second word, stay awake. It means, hey, you need to be alert. Don't go to sleep. Not physically. Don't let your heart and mind go to sleep so that you're ignorant of what God's doing in you and in the world. And then the last two are very synonymous. He says, watch and be ready. The last one, be ready, means to just be in a state of readiness. But watch means to continually be ready. In other words, what should you and I be doing right now as we wait from today till the time when Christ returns? We should be in a continual, constant state of readying ourselves for the day when Christ returns. Okay? In other words, Jesus is saying, there are things that you and I should be doing right now that will help us prepare for the day in which Christ returns. Right? So let me give you an example. Kind of an example from my life of the idea that Jesus is saying. So back when I was in high school, I had a buddy, Ryan. We were like workout partners. He was a tight end, and then I played on defense, and so linebacker. And so we worked out together, and we worked out relentlessly all the time. We lifted weights, and we ran. I hated running, by the way. I still do. But I loved lifting weights. And so we lifted weights and we ran. And so eventually the coaches saw that, hey, we had a desire to lift weights and do all that. So they gave us a key to the weight room, it had like a little padlock on it. And they gave us a key. So we'd go up there anytime we wanted to. And so we went 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. The only week we took off was the week we were at summer camp, right? So we would go work during the day, and we would come up, and then we would go run in the valley between the two, high school and the middle school. We'd go run. We'd run the hills, you know, and then there's a few times we'd go run the stadium steps. So they gave us a key to get into the stadium, and so we'd go run up the stadium and run down, and then you'd run the turn of the track, and then you'd do the other side, and then you'd come back, and you'd do the other side, and you'd come back, and all that. And we'd, you know, somebody'd say, why are y'all doing all this? Because come about the third week in August, when it's hot as Hades, and it's 8 o'clock at night, I'm going to be in better shape than that dude that's on the other side of the ball. Because I know one day is coming, the day is coming when I'm going to need to be ready and be in shape and be physically as fit as I can be so I can win. And in the same way, Jesus is saying, now is your time to be ready. Because look. If we all knew Jesus is going to return at blank time on blank day, most of us, myself, a number one, unless you're the rare non-procrastinator, would wait till about a week before. we'd quit our job, then we'd start reading our Bible and telling folk about it. Come on. Right before you're about to leave. Are you packing today for vacation in July? Heck no. You're going to wait to the hours before. Every year it is my goal to be ready before vacation. Like if we're leaving on Saturday, it's for us to be completely done. 2 p.m. Never happens. Never happens. Jesus doesn't tell us so that today we'll be getting ready and tomorrow we'll be getting ready and the next day so that when He does come, we will be infinitely prepared and we have done everything we can in our own hearts and in those around us to bring them into the kingdom of God so that we might be prepared so that everyone, as many people as can enter into His kingdom. Right? Now here's the question. How do we get ready? What should we be doing to get us ready? Well, unfortunately, that question is, for this moment, we don't have time to answer that question. But Jesus significantly answers it in chapter 25. He gives three parables that tell you how to get ready. If you want to know how to get ready, Christ, you need to read Matthew 25 this week because He gives three parables. Each has a point of how to get ready. The first parable is the parable of the 10 virgins. The second one is the parable of the talents. And then in the last few verses, He kind of gives some other illustration as well. And so He gives these 2 to 3 parables that all tell you exactly what you need to be doing. Now, He's not going to tell you like specifically for your life and your circumstance, but He's going to give you a general principle of how you can get ready for the return of Christ. And that's my challenge for you this week, is to do whatever it takes for you to get ready for the return of Christ. Because the reality is, no one knows the day nor the hour, but we know it's happening, and we know it's coming, and we're one day closer than we were yesterday. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.